Lactated Ringers is an isotonic crystalloid IV fluid that I believe many healthcare professionals aren't familiar with outside of the operating room. I know I learned about it in nursing school, but when I went to work on a telemetry unit, we never used it. And I never really saw it used until I went to work for about 4 years. Even when I worked in the ICU after that, I never saw it used. So I think that coming into anesthesia, many of us haven't really seen the fluid used much, and so don't know a whole lot about it. I think with lacking familiarity, it's easy to overlook the benefits and assume that it's pretty much interchangeable with fluids like normal saline. However, this is not even close to the case. You may hear some people say there's nothing normal about normal saline, and they're right. Today I'll be discussing why lactated Ringers is the ideal fluid for just about every patient you take care of, and why normal saline really has no place for almost any patient that you're going to be taking care of in anesthesia. So lactated Ringers is an older fluid. It's been around for quite a long time. It is a crystalloid that contains 130 milliequivalents per liter of sodium. Normal body sodium is 135 to 145. 4 milliequivalents per liter of potassium. Normal body potassium is 3.5 to 5. It has a pH of 6.5, so it's slightly acidic, and its osmolarity is 273 milliosmoles per liter. Normal plasma osmolarity is about 282, so it's slightly hypotonic, but classified as isotonic. It also contains 28 milliequivalents per liter of lactate and 2.7 milliequivalents per liter of calcium. Normal saline is also a crystalloid. It contains 154 milliequivalents of sodium and 154 milliequivalents of chloride. Normal chloride is about 96 to 106. Saline also has a pH of 6 and an osmolarity of about 286, so it's slightly more acidic than LR and considered isotonic, but it's actually slightly hypertonic. Now that we know the contents of each fluid, we can discuss some of the merits and drawbacks of each. Some of the common problems you will hear about with lactated Ringers are that you can't give it to people with renal failure because it contains potassium. You can't give it to somebody who is septic or has lactic acidosis because it contains lactate. And you can't give it to somebody who's receiving blood because it contains calcium. One of these is somewhat accurate, the rest are nonsense. First, the sort of accurate one, which is you shouldn't give LR to somebody receiving blood. LR is actually fine to give to someone who's receiving blood products, however, it should not be given in the same tubing. This is due to some blood products containing citrate. Citrate will chelate the calcium and lead to a precipitation in the fluid, which may cause clotting and obstruction of the line. You will very likely hear that you should not give LR to patients with renal failure due to its potassium content. On the surface, this seems to make sense, because you're always worried that somebody with renal failure is going to have elevated potassium, so if you give them a fluid with potassium, it'll just drive the potassium up. However, this is not the case. The patient's potassium volume of distribution is larger than the extracellular compartment and equilibrates between the intracellular and extracellular compartments, therefore giving a patient, even in renal failure, 4 milliequivalents per liter of potassium does not have an additive effect. Think back to the ICU when you would have somebody who needed potassium replacement. You would give them a bag or two of potassium chloride, which had 10 milliequivalents in 50 mils. After just one bag, did their potassium rise that much? I recall a 10 milliequivalent bag increasing their potassium by maybe half a point. If you do the math, these 50 mil bags have a concentration of 200 milliequivalents per liter. LR has 4. Does it make any logical sense that giving LR to a renal failure patient would actually increase their potassium? No. Actually, based on the volume of distribution and the concentration of potassium in LR, the most likely result would be a decrease in the potassium level because of dilution effects. So usually, the assumption is that you should give a renal failure patient normal saline. This is flawed thinking, though. Recall, normal saline contains 154 milliequivalents per liter of chloride. Normal chloride levels in the body are 96 to 106. So by giving normal saline, you are significantly increasing the patient's chloride level. This leads to hyperchloremic metabolic acidosis, which is a non-anion gap metabolic acidosis. And as you hopefully recall, acidosis leads to hyperkalemia due to the hydrogen-potassium exchange pump in your cells. So giving somebody normal saline who is in renal failure will actually drive their potassium up, while giving LR to a patient in renal failure will bring their potassium down. In case you're wondering, how hyperchloremic metabolic acidosis works. There is a chloride bicarb exchange pump within your red blood cells. This pump moves chloride into the cell in exchange for bicarb. As chloride levels increase, this pump becomes more active, pumping more chloride into the cell and more bicarb out of the cell into the plasma. This extracellular bicarb is then excreted by the kidneys. Lack of bicarb due to this excretion means it will not be available to buffer hydrogen ions, which results in metabolic acidosis. And the third misconception with LR is that the lactate within LR increases or causes lactic acidosis. The lactate within LR is actually sodium lactate, not lactic acid. So what's the difference? To understand, we'll have to discuss biochemistry just a little bit, but I'll keep it pretty simple. Under aerobic physiologic conditions, glucose is metabolized via glycolysis and produces pyruvate. Pyruvate enters the Krebs cycle, where a series of chemical reactions leads to energy production. Under anaerobic conditions, pyruvate forms lactate instead of entering the Krebs cycle. This produces some energy, but not nearly as much. This lactate molecule can be converted back to pyruvate and then enter the Krebs cycle. Lactate also acts as a buffer by binding hydrogen ions. When lactate binds to a hydrogen ion, it forms lactic acid. However, this does not mean that giving lactate leads to lactic acidosis. Lactate binding to a hydrogen ion and forming lactic acid is the same as bicarb binding to a hydrogen ion and forming carbonic acid. When your patient is acidotic and you give them bicarb, do they become more acidotic? No. So the lactate in LR can lead to increased energy production, or it can bind to hydrogen ions and buffer them. No acidosis. So then when should you avoid LR? Primarily with liver failure, because the liver is the primary site of metabolism of lactate, so the lactate levels could build up. The rest of the electrolytes within LR would be managed just fine in liver failure otherwise. So when would normal saline be appropriate? My contention would be almost never. Sometimes you'll see normal saline used with neurosurgeries. This is because normal saline is slightly hypertonic, which would help to pull fluids out of the brain tissue to reduce fluid volume in the brain. However, the osmotic draw would only be slight, and there are many more effective fluids to be used, such as mannitol. So then if you're unable to use LR due to something like liver failure or needing to prime your fluid line through which you'll be giving blood products, what should you use? I would suggest plasmolyte. Other than treating mild hyponatremia, I can think of almost no situation where normal saline is a superior choice for use by anesthesia in the OR. Well, thanks for listening, and I hope this has improved your understanding.